So, brother, we're continuing in Revelation, the 12th chapter, and we are going to reread the chapter, and then we're going to pick up with a reading that we had mentioned last week in the third volume of regarding the French Revolution, which is this flood of waters that went forth. So, Sister Connie, could you start in Revelation 12 by reading verses 1 through 5, Brother Dan, 6 through 10, Brother David Vickery, 11, right through the end.
And a great sign was seen in heaven, a woman arrayed with the sun and the moon under her feet, and upon her head a crown of stars. And she was with child, and she cried out, travailing in birth and in pain to be delivered. And there was seen another sign in heaven, and behold, a great red dragon, having 7 heads and 10 horns, and upon his heads 7 diadems. And his tail draweth the third part of the stars of heaven, and did cast them to the earth. And the dragon standeth before the woman that is about to be delivered, that when she is delivered, he may devour her child. And she was delivered of a son, a man-child, who is to rule all the nations with a rod of iron. And her child was caught up unto God and unto his throne.
And the woman fled into the wilderness, where she hath a place prepared of God, that they should feed her there 1,260 days. And there was war in heaven. Michael and his angels fought against the dragon, and the dragon fought and his angels and prevailed, and the dragon fought and his angels and prevailed not, neither was there their place found any more in heaven. And the great dragon was cast out, that old serpent called the devil and Satan, which deceived the whole world. He was cast out into the earth, and his angels were cast out with him. And I heard a loud voice saying in heaven, now is come salvation and strength and the kingdom of our God and the power of his Christ. For the accuser of our brethren is cast down, which accused them before our God day and night.
And they conquered him through the blood of the Lamb, and through the word of their testimony, and they loved not their life to death. Therefore rejoice, heavens, and those who tabernacle in them. Woe to the earth and to the sea, because the enemy is gone down to you, having great wrath, knowing that he has a short season. And when the dragon saw that he was cast to the earth, he pursued the woman who brought forth the male child. And there were given to the woman the 2 wings of the great eagle, that she might fly into the desert, into her place, that she should be nourished there a season and seasons and half a season, and the face from the face of the serpent. And the serpent cast out of his mouth after the woman water as a river, that he might cause her to be carried away by the stream. And the earth helped the woman, and the earth opened her mouth and drank up the river which the dragon cast out of his mouth. And the dragon was enraged against the woman and went away to make war against that remainder of her seed who kept the commandments of God and have the testimony of Jesus.
All right. Thank you. Were there any comments or questions left over from last week? So I think we've developed ourselves successfully in Revelation, the 12th chapter, to recognize that we've covered the area of the rise of nominal Christianity to the point of being born, as it were, this man-child, which would grow to be the man of sin. He's the counterfeit Michael, which is the line of popes of the papacy. And how there was the conflict or struggle but for power between the emperors of Rome from Constantine the First onward, who was our first nominally Christian emperor of Rome, So it was, that was the dragon struggling with Michael. They had their struggles from, basically, it's three, we date it starting with 325 with the Council of Nicaea, and it progresses onward, and it finally culminates with the, papacy winning, as it were, gaining control. It came on in starts and fits. One of the developments was 533 AD, when Justinian I gave the title of Pontifex Maximus, supreme religious ruler, to the Pope, who was the Bishop of Rome, to the Pope. And you remember Justinian I was in Constantinople, which is known as the eastern part of the empire, eastern part of the Roman Empire. It's today's Istanbul. And the Pope was over in Rome, the Bishop of Rome. That's the Western Empire, the Western part of the Roman Empire. And so Justinian needed a political leader to represent his views in Rome. We'll talk more on that. So that was a development. And then that continued, into, the papacy continued to develop in its power. And in Christmas Day of 800 AD, a couple hundred years later, from 533, a couple hundred years later, he crowns Charlemagne the First. And when he crowned Charlemagne the First, this was, which was to Charlemagne's shock and surprise, this then is where we start our Holy Roman Empire. The Pope, first bestowing the crown. Charlemagne and his father Pepin the Short. We say that because Charlemagne had a son named Pepin, but it's his father, Pepin the Short, granted the papal states, large swath of Italy, to the Pope, and they held these papal states. Now, I want you to remember, you'll remember this, but I'm saying it. The papal states resided with the papacy all the way till Victor Emmanuel the First, way down in the late 1800s. When Victor Emmanuel took the papal states away from the papacy, and Victor Emmanuel united Italy. Victor Emmanuel the First united Italy. And so what you and I see today of the papacy, their landholding particular, it's called the Vatican City. It's confined to the Vatican City. They no longer have this vast tract of land called the Papal States, which was donated by Pepin the Short, late 700s, confirmed by Charlemagne, and the Pope crowned Charlemagne Christmas Day 800. So that what you have there is you have the beginning of the Holy Roman Empire all the way down to the late 1800s when this Papal States were removed. So that's just a point. It's in passing, it'll come up a little bit further along, but it does just help demonstrate how the counterfeit Michael, the line of popes and the papacy, gained the supremacy over the dragon, the civil powers. And it was a process from 325 to, let's say, 533, 539, a further process till 800, the papacy continued to grow in power. So that's where we were. We had discussed how the papacy used the true saints' martyrdom and deaths in order to claim their authority, so that even today the papacy still claims the first popes were Peter and Paul, and they built their church on them, and because they were martyred in Rome, and so they claimed to, you know, have built literally their church there. And so it was by using this, all they were, the counterfeit Michael was using the true martyrdom of the saints to their advantage. And that's why it's called an antichrist system. It's an instead of Christ. They've taken the name of Christ and all things good, and then they counterfeited it, and they use it to promote their false doctrines and their false practices. Everything from transubstantiation to the Trinity to the obedience to the Pope as the head of the church, the vicar of Christ on earth, and the confessions and Mariolatry, a co-redemptrix, all of this has had such tremendous support that over a billion people on earth today still believe it in our enlightened and educated times. But it goes all the way back to this tactic of Satan: if you can't beat them, join them, and then corrupt them. And no marvel, because Satan himself, the prince of darkness, can appear as an angel of light. So that's our, that's what we were discussing the last couple of weeks. That gets us to, I think we developed it right to, our verse, 15. We talked in verse, we'll back up to verse, 13. And when the dragon saw that he was cast unto the earth, he persecuted the woman which brought forth the man-child, and to the woman were given two wings of a great eagle, that she might fly into the wilderness, into her place, where she is nourished for a time, times, and half a time, from the face of the serpent. And the woman cast, sorry, and the serpent cast out of his mouth water as a flood after the woman, that he might cause her to be carried away of the flood. And the earth helped the woman, and the earth opened her mouth and swallowed up the flood which the dragon cast out of his mouth. So, in verse 13, during our discussions, we see the emphasis of the dragon is on the civil power, which Satan uses to persecute. And so Satan works through his religious power, the papacy. The papacy then dictates to the civil powers to do its persecuting for it, because the papacy does not have its own army. The Swiss Guard is just ceremonial, as you know. So the papacy always relied on the armies of the kings or rulers that they had control over. So it's true, the dragon, the civil power, under the direction of the papacy, persecuted the true church. And it was during this time of the 1260 years, this time, times and dividing a time, this long 1260 year period, that the dragon was persecuting the true church at the behest of the papal leaders, the popes. So we had our inquisitions and various persecutions. And when you read of the inquisitions and the inquisitors and the persecutors, it was always religious leaders using the military might of the empire to do the, to actually do the dirty work, if you will. And, so I'm going to just ask at this point, who would like to tell us again? We keep going over it, but it's good. Tell us again, how we figure our 1260 years from this expression, time, times, and half a time, and when do we start it and when do we stop it, and kind of fill that in for us. Brother Mark.
All right, I'll take a shot at it. So the times plural and half a time gives us basically 3.5 words that you might say are time, and then a half time, because that one is plural and in the middle. And then, so you get, cross-reference that time to a year, which is 360 days roughly. And so we got 3 times 360 plus a half time of 180 gives us the 1260 or 1260 years. And we start that at 539 and ending that at 1799. And the 539, I believe, has something to do with Justinian, combining the two Eastern and Western hemisphere or empires finally. And then the 1799 is the French Revolution, where I think that kind of relates to the Satan pouring out the waters on the earth. In other words, the water is symbolical for truth, and those were partially mainly in France, the rights of men, and causing a big revolution there in 1799. And over.
Well, that's a very good job. Thank you, Brother Mark. Right on. And the 360, as Brother Mark was bringing out, it's almost a year. We know that we have 365 days in a year, and then we need a leap year every fourth year to throw in the extra day to keep us really on course. But the 360 is the prophetic year reckoning that we use. It's closer to the lunar year that the Hebrews were using. All the way back in Genesis with the flood, there's a means by which we can reckon that the Lord intended us to think of the time as 12 months of 30 days each. 12 months, 30 days each equals 360 days in a prophetic year. And that's what we calculate as Brother Mark just did. So that's great. And Mark very well said that in 539 A.D., Justinian I, who was the emperor whose capital was in the east at Constantinople, he wanted to solidify a representative power authority in the western part of the empire, which had been Rome, and he picked the Pope. And yet the Pope didn't have an army, as we've been talking about. So what happened was Justinian had sent his general Belisarius to go and defeat the various Gothic powers in North Africa, in parts of lower parts of Europe, and then of course including Italy, and it included the areas which included Rome. And so Belisarius defeated the last of the Gothic kings, as it were, at the time in 539 AD. They had been defeated. That was a King Odoacer, and his capital was in Italy. It wasn't Rome. It was Ravenna. Now it's not quite the end of the Goths forever. Actually, there's more conflict that followed. Charlemagne finally took care of it a couple hundred years later. But what it did do, though, was it did grant greater control or authority to the Pope. Now, Ruth, I think, sent out an email to you of some excellent references about how Justinian. Sorry, I'm going to take a quick look. I've been reading so much the last couple of days. Yeah. Justinian was trying to unite his kingdom under Trinitarianism. Justinian believed in the Trinity, and he was trying to unite the western part of the empire with the eastern part of the empire as Trinitarians, and they were struggling with that. And the Pope believed in the Trinity. So it was an attempt to try to unite the empire with this viewpoint. And this would continue to be a theme. Because all the way down with Charlemagne and his father, Pepin the Short, they were Trinitarians. So a couple hundred years later, this effort to try to unite the empire as Trinitarian had continued. The Goths and the Ostrogoths and the Visigoths, these Gothic peoples that were ravaging or controlling Europe, in the 300s and 400s and 500s and on, they were mainly Arians. They couldn't grasp the thought of three gods in one. They could grasp the thought of one God who had a son, who he sent. So when they became Christianized early on, they could grasp that, and they were Arian in view. But the empire was meant to be consolidated under Trinitarianism in the long run. Ruth.
Well, I'm sorry to say, but I have no recollection of sending anything like that out. So it must have been a while ago. Was it a while ago? I could go back to my old mail and send it out again.
Okay. You didn't send it out. Okay. It's all right. I thought I saw something. I thought you sent something out to the group.
I sent it to you. Sorry.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll say it's coming along with a few other things. All right. Thank you for clarifying that. Everyone's looking for your mail. Sorry. False alarm. Sister Carrie.
Is it known why Justinian wanted a Trinitarian point of view in the empire?
Well, that was his personal belief. And that was his personal belief, and it was struggling because the empire had been divided. It had been divided politically, and then it ended up being divided religiously. And this, this continued over a number of centuries, really. So, one of the things that strike me is the peculiarities of history is how Constantine wanted to unify his new so-called Christian empire under Christianity. And he called this first church council, the Council of Nicaea, in 325 AD to try to reconcile the views. Is God and Jesus of the same substance and co-eternal and co-equal? Or is Jesus a created being, which God alone would be eternal? And you remember the big debate, and Arius promoted the correct view. Athanasius was the spokesman with the opposing view. And the emperor decided the issue. He decided with the Athanasian view. He decided that God and Jesus were co-equal, co-eternal. And he thought that would unite the empire. And he excommunicated Arius. He was banished. But it didn't unite the empire. And Constantine later changed his mind. And he called Arius to come back to the court and be reconciled. And Arius was died along the way. They think he was murdered. So what happened was, you, after that, you had some emperors who were Arian in view. You had, as we were bringing out, the so-called barbarians, the Gothic, various Gothic tribes of Europe. When they converted to Christianity, they were more Arian in view. But over in the East, because Constantine had moved the capital in 330 AD, 5 years after the Council of Nicaea. He moved the capital from Rome over to Constantinople in Turkey, modern day Istanbul. So he didn't mean to, but he ended up dividing the empire into two sections, east and west, and two ends of the Mediterranean. Not quite two ends, but it was subdivided there. Brother Roddy.
So one answer possible to Sister Carrie's question is that the Trinitarian gods or Godhead isn't an original thought. In fact, I just pulled up a website that says that it's generally, although erroneously supposed, that the doctrine of the Trinity is of Christian origin. Nearly every nation of antiquity possessed a similar doctrine. So this had an influence on which one would be more easily accepted. Sumeria had a Trinitarian of doctrines. And it says here that the universe was divided into three regions, which became the domain of a god. Together they constituted the triad of great gods. The Babylonians recognized the doctrine of the Trinity or three persons in one god, as appears from the composite god with three heads forming part of the mythology. And it goes on showing India, Greece, Egypt also, and then there's other areas. So this wasn't an original concept that was developed by the Christian or the Catholic Church. It had been popularized before in many different ways, and so even the pagans, they believed in multiple gods, and so it was easier to pass that upon. If you're trying to unite a region, you want to use the what's mostly acceptable, and it's probably easier to get the people to believe in the truth.
All right, very good. No, we appreciate that. Yes, the Trinity has been long-standing. It goes back to Isis. And anyone remember that story in the Egyptian mystery religions that centered around Isis and her son? Anyone remember that? Pardon.
Well, probably too quick to raise my hand. I don't remember it in detail, but it goes back to Nimrod and his mother. And after Nimrod's death, his mother, Semiramis, or however we pronounce it, she erected, if you will, the worship of her dead son. And so we have the father, the son, I raised my hand too quickly, but it goes back to, after the flood, and Nimrod, the great hunter, and his mother. Over.
All right. Good. That's putting parts of the pieces together. Who killed Nimrod, do we think? Suggested? Brother Chris, go ahead.
Shem?
Yeah, and you remember the story? Can you pick up the storyline?
They had taken him and killed Nimrod and then cut him in pieces and mailed it out as a warning that, you know, this man was evil and practiced idolatry, and don't be like him or this could happen to you, sort of a message, if I remember correctly. Over.
No, that's good. Right. Semiramis is one name. Isis is another name in Egypt. And the point is that that was his mother, Nimrod's mother. And she made an effort to gather all these mailed out body parts. And then she created a cult religion, the first of the mystery religions. And she claimed that she had married him. He was a father, her husband, and yet it was her son. So it started the first Trinity. And if you study in ancient Christian Trinity, you'll come to find that the first expression of the Trinity. Now, this isn't well known, but you can find it, was the Father, the Son, and Mary as the Mother of God and the Mother of Jesus. So that her name to this day among the Catholics is Theotokos, God carrier or God bearer. Because they believe Jesus is God in the flesh, God man. And she's the mother that bore him, but she was impregnated by God through the Holy Spirit, right? The Holy Spirit. So it's a twisted kind of Trinity, but then they adjusted that, dropped Mary out as part of the Trinity and introduced the Holy Spirit. But as far as Roman Catholic theology goes, Mary is a co-redemptrix. Because without her, we wouldn't have had our God-man. So she's the God-bearer. Truth is stranger than fiction. Ruth.
If anybody wants to read about that background, we have it right on the website on the free downloads, Mythology in the Bible.
Mythology in the Bible. There you go. Perfect. Thank you. So, brother, we kind of digressed here. Let me see. Here's an answer. Sister Debbie.
Isn't it also in Faith's Foundations, written by the Edgar brothers?
Yeah, thanks. That's great. So I've got to go all the way back. Thank you for all the good comments. Perhaps I talked too long on this line, so I'm going to leave it there. Just kind of, I think we've kind of lost the thread I was building, which is okay. I'm not going to repeat it. What we're going to do then is we're going to pick up in our Revelation 12 in verse 14. We identified our period of time from 539 AD down to 1799. During that long 1260 years, papacy through the civil powers was trying to, was persecuting the truer or purer element of the church all through what we call the Dark Ages. So finally, Napoleon put a stop to it in 1799 when he imprisoned the Pope twice, and the Pope died the second time in prison. And then Napoleon, oddly enough, reinstituted the papacy as a state religion so that he had the Pope out so he could be coronated as the emperor of the Roman Empire. And so a very, very peculiar switch around in history. But regardless, our in the Revelation, the Lord is guiding us to this point at the conclusion of the 1260 years, the last 10 years of it. If it ended in 1799, the last 10 years would have started in 1789, and that's the start of the French Revolution. France was the center of the papal power at the time in Europe. So we have our French Revolution, and we say to ourselves, why would Satan do this? Why would Satan think casting out truth out of the mouth shows that it's expressed like words, whether written or spoken, out of the mouth. And the water does represent truths. But this is where we pick up that it seemed to be the truths that would lead to this French Revolution, which ended up with the demise of the Holy Roman Empire. Why would Satan do that? Well, it kind of backfired on him. It didn't work out exactly the way he thought it would. In fact, it didn't work out successfully for them all, and that's what makes the dragon wroth. That's what makes Satan wroth with how events turned out. The Lord used it for good. So we're going to read about this in our third volume. We said last week, so I hope you got your third volume with you. The study in the third volume is in the days of waiting. And for you who are, remember when we studied in Revelation, the 10th chapter, we spent a lot of time looking at the 1260 years. We spent a lot of time in Daniel, the 12th chapter, where we have our days of waiting. We have our 1260 years, our 1290 years, 1335 years. All had the same starting point, but they had different ending points. But this ending point is the first one, the 1260 years, a days of waiting. It ended with this French Revolution. That's the setting in the third volume. So let's start reading there. And Sister Molly, do you have yours handy? Okay. So even though it seems a little jagged maybe to start, it'll jump in pretty clearly here. Start on page 63 where it says not only, toward the bottom, 63 toward the bottom, not only. Could you read a paragraph and then read right through onto page 64 with the end of Voltaire's quote?
Okay. Not only does the general increase confirm the teachings of Daniel 11 that the time of the end began in 1799, but the predicted running to and fro, much and rapid traveling also confirms it. These all belong to the time of the end. The first steamboat was operated in 1807, the first steam car in 1844, telegraph in 1844. Yet today, thousands of mammoth cars and steamships are carrying multitudes hither and thither to and fro. Sir Isaac Newton, the celebrated astronomer of the 17th century, was greatly interested in this statement by the prophet Daniel and declared his belief that in fulfillment of it, human knowledge would so increase that men would possibly travel at the rate of 50 miles an hour. Voltaire, the noted French infidel, got hold of this statement and scornfully remarked, "Now look at the mighty mind of Newton, the great philosopher who discovered the law of gravitation. When he became an old man and got into his dotage, he began to study the book called the Bible. And in order to credit its fabulous nonsense, he would have us believe that the knowledge of mankind will yet be so increased that we shall by 50 miles an hour." Poor dotard.
All right. Thank you. And then Sister Cheryl, could you pick up and just start reading? I'll interrupt you after a bit.
Did you say me?
Yes.
Both of these men died long before the time of the end had brought its wonderful increase of knowledge, which more than fulfills the prediction of the Christian philosopher based upon the revelation. Not for Daniel, but for God's children living during the time of the end was the conversation, etc., related in verses 5 through 7. "And I, Daniel, looked, and behold, there were two others standing, one on this side of the bank of the flood," Young's translation, "and the other on that side of the bank of the flood. And one said to the man who was above the waters of the stream, 'How long shall it be to the end of these wonders?' Then heard I the man clothed in linen who was above the waters of the flood, and he lifted up his right hand and his left unto the heavens and swore by the ever-living one that the end should be after a time, times, and half a time. The matter of special inquiry was the abomination of desolation of chapter 11, 31 through 33, which Daniel rightly associated with the terrible character seen in his previous visions recorded in chapters 7 and 8. The time, times, and half a time, or 3.5 times or years, 360 times 3.5 equal 1260 days, symbolic time, 1260 literal years, here mentioned are elsewhere shown to be the period of papacy's power. Compare Daniel 7 and chapter 12 and Revelation 12 and Revelation 12, 6, 13, and 5. The flood in or during which these 1260 years of papal power terminated, as shown by the angel standing upon the flood, declaring the limit of times, symbolized a condition of things during the French Revolution already referred to. This is the same flood mentioned in Revelation 12, 15, and 16, where it is shown more fully as coming out of the mouth of the serpent or dragon, and where its real object, from Satan's standpoint, is explained to be to overwhelm the woman, the protesting Church of God, as her 3.5 times, 1260 years, of wilderness hiding were about closing, and she was coming forward into prominence, leaning on the arm of her beloved, the Word of God. Songs of Solomon 8:5.
Thank you. Thank you. That's great. Sorry. I know it's kind of crude to interrupt that way, but you were doing great. Sister Brenda, could you pick up reading for us?
There we go. Sorry about that. In symbol, water generally represents truth, and the symbol preserves its meaning, even though it is said to issue from the mouth of the dragon or serpent. The thought conveyed by this symbol is that truth would issue forth through evil agencies and with an evil intent. And just this, we find the strength of the French Revolution lay in the fact that it was instigated by many stern truths regarding priestcraft and kingcraft and regarding the individual rights and liberties of all. The rights of man was indeed the watchword of that revolt against civil and ecclesiastical oppression. Truths regarding human rights were seen and expressed there, which caused us surprise when we consider the ignorance, superstition, and civility of that day under which the masses had so long rested. Many of the truths which then swept as a flood over France, divulged it with blood, are now very generally accepted among all civilized peoples, but they were too strong and too suddenly put for that time. Indeed, the prophecy clearly shows that the serpent, Satan, did not intend that God's providence has resulted, but the reverse, that in this he overreached himself, as he has done on other occasions. Satan will never send forth the waters of truth to bless and refresh and release from bondage. On the contrary, his effort has all along been to blind and securely bind mankind under ignorance and superstition, and this sudden flood of waters, truth, was designed to act as an emetic to lead to the casting out of the food of liberty already being received by the people from the Bible as a result of the Reformation, and thus to force rulers and teachers to oppose the truth through the fear of anarchy.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Again, sorry. So rude to have to jump in here. Ruth, you want to pick up reading?
Satan's design in instigating the French Revolution was to create an alarm throughout Europe, especially among the influential class, unfavorable to liberty, and to illustrate in France the theory that, were the superstitions of Rome to be overthrown and liberty to be given full sway, all law and order would speedily end. This was a masterstroke of policy, worthy of its author and designed, as the prophet shows, to overwhelm the woman, the Reformed Church, and to drive all conservatives and peace lovers, rulers and ruled, back to union and harmony with papacy. The failure of the scheme was not due to lack of craftiness in its designer, but to the overruling power of God, whereby he is able to cause all things to work together for good. In this case, God's plan for the protection of the woman, church, from Satan's wiles and for causing the intended ill to work out good may be clearly traced in exact fulfillment of the prediction made 1700 years before, namely, and the earth helped the woman, and the earth opened her mouth and swallowed up the flood which the dragon cast out of his mouth. The earth, in symbol, as already explained, represents society, order-loving people. And it is a fact of history that the flood of truth, which spread over France a reigning papacy and its priestcraft and monarchy and its parasitic aristocracy as the responsible causes of much of the ignorance, poverty, and superstition of the people was swallowed up or absorbed by the people of Europe generally, the Roman earth. To such an extent was this the case that though papacy and royal aristocracy were thoroughly alarmed, they were also thoroughly separated by the fall of papal influence as well as by Napoleon's armies. And when the man of destiny was finally crushed and the rulers of Europe formed what was called the Holy Alliance for the suppression of the liberties of the people and the perpetuation of their own thrones, it was too late to fetter the people. For having drunk up the flood of waters, they would not submit. It was also too late to think of reestablishing papacy, which had been so terribly humiliated and whose anathemas against liberty and the French had so reacted against itself. So the Pope was not even invited to join the Holy Alliance, of which before he would have been the recognized head. Thus the woman, the reformed and progressing Church of God, was helped, spared from being overwhelmed, and liberty and truth stepped out to prominence before men. And from that time forward, the spirit of liberty and God's word have led all who were willing to follow into more and more light and truth.
All right. Thank you. So, brethren, this really, I think these pages we just read really encapsulates the thought of where we are here. As always, the word of God is integrated in many different ways. So we kind of have to choose a place to break off for today's study. So who would like then to sum up in your own words what we've just considered and put it into context with our study here on verse 14 through 16. Sister Cheryl.
Well, I'll make it pretty simple. It seems to be Satan was aware of it at the end of this 3.5-year symbolic period that God's people were proceeding and truth was to release them from their bondage. So through the giving out of this truth, which he never, like the pastor brings out, he never gives truth to bless and enlighten people, but this flood of truth, because it was due, he was a part of in trying to act like it was liberty and blessings, but he had really hoped that through the civil power that they would take charge and stop the nonsense and put their foot down. But because it was the time of the end and the time for God's people to progress and for knowledge to shine forth, it backfired on them. They weren't able to take charge, and it's all shown in the Pope taken prisoner. I mean, his authority was over. So his giving of the truth, seeing the time frame, backfired on him, thinking that the civil power would take over and put a stop to it. Over.
Okay, very good. Very good. Appreciate that. Well said. Brother Dan.
Not much more to add. But just as brought out, Satan saw that the truth, with the Reformation, reformers' work, was starting to, take hold. He saw the danger of it. And so, he came up with a plan, if you eat too much food, even if it's good food, too fast or too much, you can get sick. And so this was Satan's plan to use truth to bring about a reaction. He was hoping to see that giving the people truth and taking them away from the superstition of the papacy would take away law and order and create anarchy, and so the people would say, we can't have this. We have to go back to the rule, you know, of the papacy, of the Dark Ages, where the people were under control. But it tells us here in verse 16 that the earth helped the woman. Those under those law-abiding people in France who loved they loved the fact that, you know, they, of course, they wanted law and order and safety for themselves and their family, but they when this truth on the rights of men came out, they just drank it up, and they saw the papacy and the royalty as for who they were, suppressing the people, taking away their rights, and so they demanded their rights, and they threw down the papacy and the aristocrats and the royalty, and that was the French Revolution. But you know, Satan didn't have that in mind at all, but the Lord overruled for his people, and we'll just leave it there. Over.
All right. Thank you. Very good. Ruth.
I just think that it's a showing us a principle that we can use later on in Revelation, that light or truth will eventually bind Satan and his influence when we get farther on to the binding of Satan, that even though he released it himself, he's going to drown in his own flood. Over.
Okay. Nice thought. Very good. All right. Other expressions on what we've read. So in harmony with what we've gone through, are you familiar with the phrase, the pendulum swing? And that's what Satan was trying to do. He was trying to create a pendulum swing. So you have to, he put out these truths of the rights of man. The pendulum swung way over here, super liberty. And he was hoping that it would be too startling for the people, and they would want to go back under the stability of papacy and aristocracy being the control. But lo and behold, it didn't swing back. Isn't that funny? I had my own hand raised. It didn't swing back. It stopped. And the point was that it was the due time for the increase of knowledge at the time of the end, 1799, and its knowledge on every subject included the rights of man. So it didn't work the way Satan had hoped it would. Sister Cindy.
Just a fun fact. I had read a book on Catherine the Great, and she ruled Russia at this same time that the French Revolution was going on and whatnot, and the cries for liberty. And there was some concern about, you know, would it spread into Russia? But her whole point on a view on the revolution and the liberty is, she said, the people are ignorant, and ignorant people cannot rule themselves. But, you know, for, you know, looking at it on hindsight, I'm thinking, yeah, but who kept them ignorant? You know? So, but it was just kind of an interesting little, I enjoyed reading what somebody else, what one of the other monarchs had to say about that, what their actual thought was on that. So just a fun fact. Over.
All right. Thank you. Very good. Bart Chris.
Yeah, just another sort of an angle way back in Matthew chapter 12, verse 25 to 29, where Jesus is telling the Pharisees, total different subject, but how can a house divided stand if Satan is casting out Satan? And we've been talking about how Satan was happy to use the civil or the religious, as long as it kept him, the people duped and suppression and people in darkness. And we know that he preferred, he had such a great relationship with the apostate church, that that would have been his preference, to keep people in darkness along that line, totally, totally duped. But Napoleon was kind of screwing things up. And so, still, no matter how this truth affected people, whether they embraced the empire and the civil authorities or gravitated towards the church, it would have been either way. But he was, Satan was casting out Satan in one direction or the other, and ultimately he lost both. Over.
Okay, very good. Very good. So true. Okay. So to bring this back into our context, it was the Lord's time for the 1260 years to come to an end. It was the Lord's time that the power of papacy to persecute was to come to an end. It was the Lord's time for the increase of knowledge and the running to and fro to start to happen. It was the Lord's time for these days of waiting periods, 1260 years, 1290 years, and the 1335 years. It was the Lord's time for these to start to be fulfilled. And in our setting here, it's particularly the first of those day, 3 days of waiting. So the first of those three periods, they all started in 539 AD, but the first one to be fulfilled was this 1260. And the woman, was able to come out of the wilderness, as it were, because the power of papacy to persecute her had been tremendously broken because of Satan's misuse of the flood water of truth to try to drive society back under stricter papal control. Instead, the people drank up those truths of the rights of man, rejected papal power for what it was, did not persecute the woman. There was a certain partial pendulum swing back after the French Revolution, as it were, to recognize papacy as a religion. But as that, the power it had was over. So the woman then, is freed from that, but the woman still ends up going back into the wilderness. And the woman is still in a wilderness condition. The pure element of the church is still outside of the city condition represented by Babylon, spiritual Babylon. So that we're outside of organized Christianity. You and I aren't considered Orthodox Christians because we don't believe in the Trinity, for example. So the woman is still in a wilderness condition, and you'll recall that that was the picture of Elijah. Remember back in 1 Kings 17, 18, and 19th chapters, we had Elijah at the end of the 1260-day period, at the end of 3.5 years. He came out of the wilderness. The priests of Baal had been defeated. And Elijah thought, this is great. Israel's going to accept the true God. But instead, they didn't accept the true God completely. And Jezebel, through Ahab, persecuted Elijah and said, I'm going to make your life like that of one of the prophets you just killed. And she was going to kill him. So Elijah fled back into the wilderness and continued, from that point on. But we're just stating that even though the wilderness period of the 1260 years ended in 1799, papacy couldn't persecute the woman the way she had through the civil powers, yet it wasn't the time for the full establishment of the truth in the church and the kingdom. We still had two more periods of waiting, days of waiting to be fulfilled and progress. So long story short, we're still in the wilderness, but this was a dramatic change in that situation. Sister Debbie and then Sister Cindy.
Well, I had a question, but I don't know if it's appropriate at this particular time or if you plan on getting to it later, but the differences from verse 14 and 15 or 15 and 16, I'm sorry. There's a major difference and, verse 15 says the serpent cast out water. And then verse 16 says that the dragon cast it out of his mouth. And I didn't know if you wanted to, you know, think about that right now or if you wanted to, you know, explain that later. Over.
Yeah. In fact, we actually went into detail last week. I brought that out as part of our study and trying to understand the relationship between the dragon and the serpent expressions being used here. And we will, we'll delve into that more. We'll revisit that as actually, and, but let's take Sister Cindy's comment.
Well, it's just kind of a little backtrack to the, revolution. The cries of liberty went throughout the world, and yet slavery was at an all-time high at that time and continued for, you know, another 50 years or so. And it just tells me that, even though, the God made provision, you know, all of these rights came from the, you know, the dragon spewing out all the stuff and the earth is drinking it up. At the same time, fallen man cannot handle, you know, the proper, what to do with these beautiful truths. You know, the liberty means not owning another human being, you know, at least in my mind. So, you know, they were happy that they were out from under the hammer of some of these monarchs. But on the other hand, you know, they were acting no better than the monarchs. So I just thought that was kind of interesting. Over.
All right. Thank you. Okay. So, just looking around for any more hands. So I could kind of take a moment in case someone's still thinking on something they wanted to say. So our, we've covered our verse 14, well, and our verse, 15. I think we've got that covered well. And our verse 16, as Sister Debbie was, questioning and what we were relating and what we talked about last week and what Brother Russell brings out in the pages that we read, that it's really Satan in both cases, whether it's dragon or serpent. It's really Satan using the means at hand in order to, you know, try to persecute the true church. And, the dragon, while it pictures, civil, power, generally speaking, the point is that the civil power was hoping to see the pendulum swing back in its favor. And, but it was Satan that was, as this serpent, which is a deceiver, trying to deceptively, like that serpent in Eden, trying to deceptively, put forth these truths of the rights of man, which are civil truths. It's not spiritual truth. It's civil truths. They were trying to put that forth And it backfired, as already discussed. And actually the people, the earth class, those who had been under religious restraint in France, actually thought that, you know what, that sounds pretty good. We do have rights. And we should be out from underneath this aristocracy that has been taxing us to death and taking our crops and keeping us as peasantry. And we don't appreciate the high and mighty conduct of the religious leaders in the big cities, who are basically partying and spending their time with the wealthy of the aristocracy and such. So they did react to that. And undoubtedly, when you and I, you know, look back historically, undoubtedly the American Revolution and then Declaration of Independence in 1776, literally just years before the French Revolution, the spirit of liberty was in the air, as it were. It would take another 100 years to be fully realized when the monarchies were finally all done away with, as it were, more completely in World War I, about 100 years later. And so there were reforms all along the way, but nonetheless, the Great War effectively put a more permanent end to the monarchies as we knew them. Sister Debbie.
I'm trying to settle this in my head a little bit, because I know you went through the different aspects of the serpent, the dragon, and all of that. But I'm thinking in these two verses, it's like the serpent maybe represents one aspect and the dragon represents another aspect, like the civil. But I'm still trying to figure out, tell you the truth, I'm still trying to figure out where did these truths originally come from? This idea of, you know, that brought on the French Revolution. Does anyone know where this river started, as it were, over?
Well, the writings, well, primarily in France. Now, see, this is a flood in France. This isn't the flood in America. You know, I did talk about the liberties. It's not the flood in England. And this isn't meant to be a mockery kind of statement. I'm just honing in and focusing. This is a flood in France. So who is writing in France that would have been an influence on French society that Satan might have used to try to create this pendulum backlash? Let's talk about that.
Well, a big one would have been this Voltaire that he quotes on page 64. He was an infidel and he was presenting a lot of these things. And also the, I can't remember all the names, but the different rulers that would rise up in the French Revolution, and then they would talk about their philosophies, and then they'd be beheaded, and then another one would come up and they'd be beheaded. I don't remember all the names, but it was from the anti-religious element. Over.
Yeah, that's good. And who was in who was visiting Never mind. I see one hand. Sister Roseanne, and I don't know. Brother Chris, are you raising your hand too? I see you got your mic open.
I did have my hand up, but it looked like you were going to go in a different direction. I was just going to quickly say that Voltaire there, as Sister Ruth explained, his reply to Newton, you can just see the spirit and attitude of a man who's supposed to be the spokesman of this liberty and how short-sighted he was. Of events that would soon follow, even though he didn't live to maybe see 50 miles an hour, it was right about that time they were approaching that. I mean, Henry Ford was racing the new automobiles in competition not too long after his life over.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Good. Sister Roseanne.
Yeah, I have in my notes that there was an Age of Enlightenment, they call it, and it began somewhere in the early 1700s. Mm-hmm. 1715. And yeah, Voltaire was part of it. There was Hobbes, John Locke, Rousseau. it was built upon the scientific revolution, and they just took the same kind of approach and applied those same thinkers would apply these same values to society and authority and began to question all aspects of societal structure. So that's all.
Yep, right on. Very good. Thank you. I won't have to keep looking for my notes now. You just solved it for me. Thank you. Brother James.
Yes. If you look up the Declaration of the Rights of Man, it was notably written by Thomas Paine, even though he was a British citizen, he lived in France for a long time, and that's where he wrote it. And there's other contributors to it, the Marquis de Lafayette, very, very much French. So those two come to mind. I think they probably would have been quite influential in the spreading of those ideas.
Okay, very good. Yes, all good. Very good. That's quite a few names there brought out. And I was going in the same direction. Brother Chris was great. I was looking at some notes that we were had on another point. But like even Benjamin Franklin from America and other Americans were visiting France prior to the revolution and such. And it carried along these ideas of liberty and created a lot of discussion. Now, America wanted French help to defeat the British. So there was that angle. No mistake. But these liberties was, if I was to use a word, I would say it was like a virus. It was contagious. And, my thinking, and it's just a possibility. It's just like something that I just think about. Doesn't make it like so in any way, but my guess is that Satan understood the time prophecy was coming to a close of the 1260 years. And while he had the opportunity, I think he was going to try to get ahead of this wave of liberty and create this pendulum swing by pouring this all out in France, his stronghold of papacy at the time. And it backfired on him. It was like his last ditch effort to maybe try to swallow up the true church because he saw his time was short. But whether he understood that, because it's all in Daniel. It was all prophesied in Daniel. He could start figuring it out. These truths were starting to be revealed. Regardless of that, he saw what was happening in America. He saw that they had freedom of religion. He hates that. He hates freedom of religion. He wants to control the religion. He wants the religion controlled by the state. That's what he did through the whole Roman Empire. That's what he was going for. So when he saw what happened in America, he wanted to try to head that off in France by pushing all this truth on that subject of the rights of man at once to overwhelm society and say, oh, that's scary, and swing that pendulum back to the control of the aristocracy and the papal hierarchy. But that's all brought up. Didn't work. Okay. So that really, we're winding down our study time on this. Was there anything more on the French Revolution and this perspective of the flood? And it's undoubtedly, again, in the Revelation 12, when we go back to verse 9, 12, 9, and the great dragon was cast out, that old serpent called the devil and Satan, which deceived the whole world. So we see that the great dragon, that old serpent, it really is representing Satan and how Satan then uses either civil power or other forms, whether it be religious or not, to try to have control over the world. And, but here we are. Now we've got to our verse, 17 for next week. We'll wind down, Ruth.
Well, it's probably obvious, but it just demonstrates throughout the whole chapter that no matter who's in control, whether it's the man-child or whether it's the papacy or whether it's the purely civil, it's all Satan behind it that's attacking the woman, trying to, like, even when you have the purely civil powers, say, like with communism, the brethren were under attack even with that. So it just shows that it's Satan's attempt to try to obliterate the woman right down to the very end.
So true. All the way back to the prophecy that God gave as Adam and Eve were being evicted from the garden, seed of the woman and the serpent, be at odds. Sister Debbie.
Could we say that, I mean, looking at the French Revolution, that when the nobles were put down, and then you had this new civil government under, like, Robespierre and that, could that be the dragon, you know, that added to the situation because they kept, you know, they didn't want any more religious control and they were controlling the people and giving them their versions of revolutionary truths? Could we say that? Over.
That could be. That very well could be. Thank you. Bar David.
Well, thanks, Brother Rick. I was just thinking about the idea that in Isaiah, it talks about blessed are our eyes and our ears because we have the understanding of God's word. And but at this time, the people of the earth had their eyes partially open, and there's no way to close them again to those truths that of equality, and that we were all created equal. They don't have the understanding or the reason to really understand the dominion that God had in store for man, but they certainly can recognize now with this flood, and it can't be taken away from them again. It can be pushed in different ways where they can still be overcome, because we still have many instances of it being used to their disadvantage by people that would lord it over them with one form or another of government. Over.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Brother Chris, quickly.
Just a brief comment on the tale of Brother David's comment. Even today, we see fear trying to take away the rights of people over the world. That's still Satan's way. It's still what terrorists use, governments use. It's all trying to suppress people's liberties or twist it up in some manner. So, and he never stops trying. Over.
So true. Age-old theory. Identify or create a problem, then offer a solution, which generally restricts liberties, and create enough fear, then the people will accept it. All right, brother, Sister Debbie, last comment.
Could we say that the COVID threat that, you know, made, you know, the lockdowns and everything that pushed us onto Zoom, he didn't expect that to come out good either. And, you know, he thought that he would isolate the Bible students from meeting with each other, but it wound up, we wound up meeting on Zoom with more brethren that we didn't know, and we get to know brethren that we never knew before. Over.
All right. Well, regardless of who brought about the virus, God did overrule it for good. Thank you. This is unrelated, but since we read it on these pages, I wanted to bring this out from our Revelation 11 study on the 1260 year period. This goes back to Revelation 11. You recall that if you were with us then, that we brought out that Brother Russell suggests there's two periods of the 1260 years that could be applied. The one that we usually use and we talked about today, but another 1260 year period from the beginning of the church councils in the 300s down to the 1500s with the release of 80 different Bible translations in the Great Reformation. You remember we talked about that. We studied that. I want you to take a look in the third volume at the bottom of page 64. Bottom of 64. Times, time, and half a times, the three and a half times or years, such and such and such. Here mentioned as elsewhere, shown to be the period of papal power. That's the point, papal power. Compare Daniel 7, Daniel 12, Revelation 12, Revelation 12, Revelation 13. He doesn't mention Revelation 11. So it's just a simple observation. This isn't proving Brother Russell's view one way or the other, but it does demonstrate that he allowed for both views of the 1260-year period in Revelation, the 11th chapter. So we don't want to go any further than that. I just thought it was interesting. He could have easily included the Revelation 11 here under papal power, the period of papal power, but he didn't. So I just leave it there at that, just for you to consider. Like I say, it doesn't, it's not proving the point one way or the other, just saying that in our mind, Brother Russell left the as an option.